a call to order this January 8, 2020 edition of the Landmarks Preservation Commission. And we'll start this, as we do now, by acknowledging that we're holding this meeting on the traditional lands of the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. We'll now have a roll call. Present, we have, and we have new commissioners, so I might have to actually
look at things.
There we go. Okay. We have Commissioner Williams, Commissioner Stewart, Commissioner Mortensen, new Commissioner Hilsendegger. We have the marvelous Vice Chair Johnson.
Present.
Chair, myself, Commissioner Bartow, and two, not just one, but two new ex officios, the illustrious Deborah Cade, who is not new to me, but new to the commission, and I probably equally as illustrious.
I appreciate it, but probably not.
Leah, Commissioner Jaggers. Mm-hmm. There we go. And did I miss anyone? No, I don't think so. Excellent. And we will move right on to our new commissioner introductions, which is great. So maybe we'll start. There's no nothing in the bylaws about how to introduce yourself. So you can.
We should probably introduce ourselves.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Maybe everybody should do that.
Yes, yeah. That would be.
That's to be controlling.
That could be. Yeah,
I think somebody wants to be an officer.
I see what's going on here. So I'll start the introductions. Maybe the people who have been here prior should start the introductions to make people feel welcome. How would that sound? Good. So moved. So I'm Kevin Bartoy, and I've been on the commission for 3 or 4 years. I'm not sure at this point, but I am a longtime Tacoman and love Tacoma as much chance as I can get to promote Tacoma. And in my other life, I work for Washington State Ferries as the Environmental Stewardship and Sustainability Program Manager.
That's it?
That's all you've got to say.
I thought that was too long already. So. But thank you for wanting to know more.
Well, mine's going to be even less verbose. I'm Roger Johnson. I've been on the commission on and off for 20 years or so. Avid preservationist. Sometimes I'm kind of quiet, but I've got opinions. And if you press me, I'll let you know. And live here in Tacoma in a historic house and... That's it.
Commissioner Williams.
I'm Jeff Williams. I am a realtor with Windermere, and I buy, renovate, and sell old houses. I've done quite a few in the North Slope, North End, Proctor, in that area. This is my 7th year on the commission, and prior to that, I was involved with Historic Tacoma. I was on the executive board there a long time ago, and so that's me.
My name is Jennifer Mortensen. It's my first term on the board, I think 2 years, I can't remember. Been to go about 2.5 years. And I work for the Washington Trust for Historic Preservation in Seattle, which is the statewide nonprofit dedicated to historic preservation advocacy. And I'm also involved with Historic Tacoma presently.
Hi, I'm Holly Stewart, and I've been on the commission for 1 year now. I live in Tacoma. I work at the Job Carr Cabin Museum, helping kids and grown-ups learn about Tacoma history. And I'm also a member of the Heritage Board.
Fantastic. And Commissioner Morgenroth has just entered the building. Whoa. And as penance for your lateness, you will now have to introduce yourself to everyone. We're doing introductions.
Cool.
For our new commissioners.
I'm Alex Morgenroth. I live up in the North End in Proctor and in a 110-year-old house, so I like the old houses and stuff. and I'm a city planner for the city of Renton, north there. So, yeah, that's me.
Great.
Yeah.
So that's out with the old, now in with the new. And starting here, Commissioner Hilsendegger.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah Hilsendegger. I live by University of Puget Sound. I was interested in joining the commission because I have a love of Tacoma history and architecture. So over my time living in Tacoma, which is most of my life, I volunteered with various organizations like Historic Tacoma. I've worked with Holly at the Job Carr Cabin. And just this last year and a half or so, I helped with the Discover Cushman event that was at the substation, put that together. So I'm excited to be here. Nice to meet everybody.
Great. Welcome. Thank you. Kate?
Deborah Cade. I'm the member for the North Slope District, and I've lived in that neighborhood for almost 25 years and been involved in the neighborhood organization for a long time. And also just recently retired from the Attorney General's office, where I represented the Department of Transportation for 31 years in environmental and land use matters, including historic preservation.
All right.
Very good at that job.
Kevin was
My name is Leah Jaggers. I'm the Wedge District ex officio, and that's purely by virtue of me living there. So I currently work for a startup that does public records requests software, but I previously worked for ESD, the state agency here. But I'm really... I'm a classical studies major, so don't let my software background fool you, but I'm really passionate about history and have been following a lot of the like social media campaigns and things like that, so I just was really interested in joining.
Fantastic. Have we had a Wedge ex officio?
Not since Ross.
This is it.
Wow.
I live in the Titlow House.
Is that the first?
You live in the Titlow House?
Yeah.
On?
Sheridan.
Sheridan.
Yeah. It's now 6 apartments.
So. My brother used to live.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Small world. Excellent. Well, welcome to everyone. And if you have any questions, make sure you ask Ruben or Lauren if he can't answer them. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. So were there any additions to the agenda? Hearing none, is there any objection to moving forward with the agenda by unanimous consent? Hearing none, we're so moved. Moving on to the excusal of absences. I believe I only have one that's excused this evening, so that is Commissioner Hart, who will have to give us a full introduction at our next meeting. And then the approval of the minutes from our, I can't believe that was our last meeting, November 13th.
It was, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's been quite some time. So the minutes from November 13th, were there any corrections to the minutes from November 13th, 2019? Hearing none, is there any objection to moving forward by unanimous consent? Hearing none, we're so moved by unanimous consent. Moving right through our agenda this evening, so that some people can make a ferry and ride the marvelous Chetumoka across mighty Dalco Passage this evening. So we'll move right into our design review.
Mr. Chair, I suggest we're actually trying to track down Michael for the design review. He may be running late, and so we could move into the Preservation Planning Board business items and, until he gets here, and if he doesn't get here, then we can revisit.
Okay. That sounds good. Moving on to preservation planning and board business. The first one is 100 South 9th Street, the Verizon appeal.
So the commissioners that were here, remember at the towards the end of mid-2019, there was a application for a cellular installation on the Bose Building, which is 100 South 9th Street, just down on 9th and 8th. And the commission denied that due to the anticipated impacts to the visual, I guess, impacts from the height of the masts and the number of them and so forth. And so the applicant, as expected, filed an appeal. That was heard towards the end of the year. And so we've attached the decision for the commission's information from a hearing examiner. The commission was upheld in this denial, but there was one, I think, probably key factor there in the decision. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I mean, people can read through it, if they've already read through it in the packet and have questions, we can talk about that. But the key thing was is that during the testimony in the appeal, the applicants indicated that they had, in fact, designed an alternative that lowered the height of the masts from what they were appealing from the Landmarks Commission's denial, which made the hearing examiner then responded by upholding the denial and saying, well, then proceed with that alternative that you say you have. And so the commission should expect to see a new application that has lower antenna and perhaps fewer, I'm not sure, but and they may move around a little bit on the roof of the building. But we just wanted to make sure that before that happened, the commission had a chance to see the decision that was written and the findings of the hearing examiner, and go into the next application, which may, I think, be in February, end of January or February, for a revised application. So has anybody read through it?
I did.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
It was really interesting, actually.
There are some testimony in here. The interesting thing is that there are some missing records. This building has had cellular antennas on it since I've been here. Many iterations of these antennas have gone into the building. And unfortunately, there aren't very good records of all of those installations and all of the decisions. And I know the applicant or the appellant stated in the testimony that the hearing examiner had previously overturned the commission on one of the installations, but I do not recall that's ever happened. And so I know there have been appeals, but I don't think that the commission has been overturned on the cell installation before. So so really, I think that a lot of, and they also brought up a lot of federal regulations about the FCC guidelines and some of the federal legislation about wireless communication. None of that really pertains to the commission's decision, and so it was, I don't think there wasn't a lot of time spent on that. And so at any rate, I don't know if there are any questions. We just wanted to put this out there ahead of the decision so that you didn't see both of these at the same time. Obviously, the commission would discuss the merits of the application that comes next when it comes. So that's all I got on that. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Okay. I have some.
Yes.
I just wanted to point out that it's important that when we're considering these kinds of applications that we follow the guidelines and that we state the guidelines in our motions and discussions, that we leave no room for doubt about our thinking process. That's about it.
Here, here.
Well, that, in this, I mean, that's a really good point, because in each of these hearings, when the commission is appealed, we usually have to explain all of the regulations that the Landmarks Commission uses, and all of the standards, and how those standards influence the decision that the commission made. And really, you almost have to assume from the record that the next person that reviews this isn't going to know a whole lot about what the commission does. So.
I also comment that I appreciate Commissioner Williams and Commissioner Schlesher's time for representing the commission at the hearing. So I know those would be long.
It was.
And it was on Halloween, correct?
It was on Halloween.
Oh, anyway, thank you for the bad egg. Appreciate that.
Okay, moving on to the demolition review primer, a new thing for the commission.
Actually, I brought it slightly revised. It's only three slides. This is probably not even worth it.
Hey, never miss an opportunity to have a PowerPoint presentation.
You know, they don't let us do animations. It's against city policy.
Really?
Yeah.
Too much flair?
Are you kidding? That sounds
sketchy.
Silly enough to
what about noises? What about those little boings?
Oh, I know. When you have the headline scroll across, it just make like the burning rubber sound. That was,
I guess, yeah. Keep
this on the wing.
Why do I have my daughter's stuff on this? Oh, here we go. That's funny. I think we can look at the birthday card invitation. It's fun. You never know when you grab a flash drive what's going to be on it.
It's dangerous.
So the reason why I wanted to put this on the agenda for this meeting is because, as many of you are aware, the City Council passed the Landmarks Commission's recommendations for revisions to the code last year, which involved a number of things, but the biggest one was introducing a citywide demolition review ordinance and also improving the existing regulations for the downtown sub-area cultural resources review. I apologize, what's up going to be up there is a little bit different than what's in your packet, just for wording clarity. Made it shorter, really. If you have read all of our policy documents, you'll see that the comprehensive plan actually supports creating a demolition review. We've had it in the books for a long time, since 2011, and so we finally got around to putting it in place. And so prior to 2019, we had the cultural resource management plan for sub-areas, the downtown and the mall sub-area. And if you recall, the Scottish Rite Temple that came to the Landmarks Commission, the commission reviewed their mitigation proposals and is in the process of reviewing the design for the new structure that replaced that building. That was something that went through the cultural resource management plan process last time. And so that was a pretty confusing set of regulations, and so we tried to clean it up last year and make it a little more sequential, a little more predictable for people. And then, obviously, the commission did demolition reviews of existing city landmarks and buildings within historic districts. But we didn't have any sort of review or protection for buildings that are outside of those sort of historic districts or are not designated landmarks or outside of the downtown area. And so we have this new demolition requirement. So there's two sections of this code, and if I can provide it if it's not already in their binders, but it's, if you want to look it up, it's 1312.570 in the code. But there's two sections to it. A is the first section is a sub-area cultural resource management plan we already had in the code, the one we cleaned up. And basically what that says, that's the second bullet point on the screen up there, that development permits must identify whether a project is in proximity to known historic or cultural resources. So it's kind of like if you're familiar with environmental review, when you're doing a demolition or a development permit of a certain scale, you have to fill out a checklist that indicates under different categories what the anticipated effects to certain environmental categories are, like traffic, light, water, air, historic, and cultural resources, and those sorts of things. This takes the place of that. It doesn't exist in our downtown anymore, and so we have this section of the code. And so, as with Scottish Rite Temple, the commission will occasionally see things that that because there is an anticipated adverse effect or there's a highly significant building that's involved, the commission may be asked to consult on that. And now it's like where Scottish Rite Temple came in. There was such a high amount of public interest in that building. The building is pretty significant. And so this commission was asked to consult on that. Citywide, and that's the first bullet point up there, we have a new code, and that is demolition. And this is kind of, it is a little bit of a mouthful, but if you have over 4,000 cumulative square feet of demolition on a parcel, on a single parcel, that's not including single family projects, or you're in a National Register Historic District or a National Register building, or you're within a mixed use center, if the building involved or the buildings involved appear to meet the criteria for designation to the Landmarks Commission or Landmarks Register, they're referred to the Landmarks Commission. We will have a couple coming up there. The other thing, I guess, about that code is that if it's in the National Register District, it automatically is referred, whereas otherwise it's the HPO's discretion. But anything involving a National Register property will come to the commission and it's going to be knocked down. And so that process is going to be interesting. And I kind of want folks to be prepared for that, because what is going to be asked of the commission when those things come forward is the commission is the body that determines whether to recommend further review to the city council committee. And so an example of this would be if someone's going to demolish a National Register building and it comes to the Landmarks Commission, the action before the commission is to determine, and it says in the code, whether the building should be considered. And so the steps involved in that are a vote from this commission, a recommendation to council committee, and then if the council committee concurs within a certain period of time of the commission, then this commission schedules a public hearing and proceeds. So it's a little check and balance in there. And so that would be something that hasn't happened before, which is an adverse nomination to the historic register. So in that particular case, when those do come forward, it's going to be really, really important that the commission really sticks to its criteria and also considers kind of the broad landscape of these things and what the impacts are. Because the kind of process that has a really significant or potentially significant effect on development projects as well. And so it's a big responsibility and there's a lot of authority. So subject to city council, but but at any rate, so that's something just to be aware of. This is a new thing and it's a new role for the commission. And so it should be kind of interesting, I think. So I think some of you picked it up, but there's also this sheet up in the front called Cultural Resources Review. It's actually over there. Lauren will hand some out. This is what we have on our permitting system right now for the sub-area Cultural Resources Review, the Scottish Rite Temple process. And it just lets you, kind of shows you how the process works, what applicants see, and really where the commission comes in is when there's mitigation proposed or something like that, that it may come before you. So I think that might be...
Scottish Rite just came in front of us because of it was adjacent to the church, right?
Scottish Rite came before you because it was within the downtown sub-area and was considered to be clearly eligible for a historic register.
Okay.
And so this is really, really too small. Whoops.
Yeah.
Can't see it on the... But I wish I had a handout for this. This was just a flow chart that shows the demolition review process for the Planning Commission last year. And so at any rate, really all the commission needs to know or needs to be aware of now is that there are some of these things that are going to come forward. You'll see them, and there will be requests for some decisions to be made about the preservation of buildings proposed for demolition. So that's another thing that's interesting, too, is that in this particular case, the commission is going to be asked to evaluate significance, knowing that there's already a demolition permit underway. So, or, you know, somewhere in the process. And so it's a big change.
Will we be basing these on just our normal criteria,
yep,
on how well the building meets the existing criteria?
Yes.
So we won't have a separate demolition permit criteria. The
decision that will be before the commission in these will be whether or not it appears that it meets the criteria and in the commission's opinion should be considered formally for landmarks review or designation.
And then that goes to the council.
And so, it's a little bit of a kind of a bounce back and forth process, but in order to, front load it before the commission goes to a full public hearing and so forth. Basically, the commission asks for concurrence from a council committee. In this case, it's infrastructure planning and sustainability. So if a recommendation from this body came out, staff, and probably I would drag Kevin or you with me, to the council committee, explain the rationale behind the commission's recommendation and ask for concurrence from the committee. And if the committee ignores us or doesn't take action or denies it, then it goes away. And if they say, go ahead, then, we concur, then it becomes a real thing. We'll schedule a public hearing, we'll do notice and everything like that. And then after all that testimony is collected and there's a comment record on it, then we'll take that to, and assuming the Landmarks Commission still recommends it for the historic register, then we take that to council as a resolution.
So without concurrence, though, from the IFPS, then it doesn't move forward.
That's right.
So if it's eligible, the owner wants to tear it down,
we can either say, yes, you can tear it down, or no, it needs to be landmarked?
You can say that that we don't think it should be placed in the register, or we do. That's the question.
We don't have any say.
Or it should be considered, I guess. It should be considered more further for landmark certification.
That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
How so?
Clearly the owner wants to tear it down. They come in front of us. We think it's eligible. We think it shouldn't be torn down. To me, it should be we're not going to issue a demolition permit, not whether it should be landmarked.
I think that the commission's ability to deny demolition permits for things that aren't designated or listed is an authority that it doesn't have. So really an outcome could be in a scenario like that is that the commission says, you know what, it should be on the historic register. And so then the developer is presented with a scenario in which they have a potential designation. Then they start looking at how can the designation and the project coexist. And that's where you might find alternative outcomes or modified designs or
tax credits might be the incentive.
Or what have you.
Gotcha. Okay.
So when you say single-family residential projects exempt, does that mean in areas outside of National Register Historic Districts?
Yes. Yeah, within the National Register Historic District, if it's contributing structure, it's in the demolition review. Commissioner Mortensen?
I forget what it's called, but the historic property report that's going to be submitted to the commission?
Yes.
Will that come in the form of a nomination packet?
It will contain similar information to a nomination.
And is that prepared by the applicant?
And the applicant's consultant, yes.
So if something's already on the National Register, they can still come in front of us
for
it to be demolished.
Yes.
So that's not, if it's on the local register, we can't allow it to be demolished.
If it's on the local register, the commission can deny the request to demolish it, which is outright.
But on a national register, we have to, I'm thinking of the church. So they come to us, the church isn't on, or it is on the local register as well. It's on national.
Which church?
The one they wanted, the Catholic Church.
Holy Rosary?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, Holy Rosary is already on the local register.
And it's on the local register.
Yeah,
okay.
And so Holy Rosary, that's a whole, I'm sure we're going to have a couple of legal opinions on this at least. But the Holy Rosary Church has been on the Tacoma Register since like 1979, something like that. And so our current understanding of the city's position on that is that if they intend to demolish a building, they will have to obtain their permits, and those permits will go through this commission to be obtained or not.
And then, so the Luzon was not on the local register.
The Luzon was, and it was. yeah, if I start twitching.
Well, I mean, the best way I can think about it is in terms of actual examples.
No, sure. So the Luzon building was locally listed, and on the National Register at that particular time. That particular case circumvented the Landmarks Commission, was declared by the city's building official as imminent collapse threat. And so,
life safety,
yeah.
Right.
And so the city manager, based on the recommendation of the building official, ordered it demolished.
Okay.
And they could, in theory, in the code, that's still an authority the building official and the city manager will always have in emergency cases, but we have put some more guidance in the code to guide that decision-making process. Commissioner Stewart?
Does this include penalties for when they move forward with demolition without commission approval?
The penalty question is something that we're working on still. That was something that came up after the Ainsworth House. And so this was already in process as a set of code amendments. And so our next set of code amendments will include some disincentives.
Is the city attorney planning this tangential, but are they planning on coming back to talk to us again?
At some point,
in a while.
Yeah,
okay,
so they have... I mean, there's only really, you know, there's a pretty short list of ways to address that that most jurisdictions use, and so we'll be coming back to talk about those. But most of them, I think, people are already aware of. I mean, there's fines, there's limits on future development, there's moratorium on future development. There might be something. It's hard. I mean, I think a couple of commissioners mentioned licensing and things like that. That's a harder thing for us to do. I mean, we can certainly keep contractors away from city contracts, but other kinds of debarment, I think, might be a little more challenging. But there are options, and currently we don't have adequate ones. So, but that case is ongoing too. So,
are we planning to review that text this year or for in the future?
I don't have an exact schedule on that right now. The plan was to put something in 2020, but the nice thing about it is because it's just a municipal code amendment, it's not beholden to the Planning Commission's annual amendment calendar.
Okay.
So we can put it in any time. Because one of the things that's challenging when you, like for Lauren and myself, and we've got Landmarks Commission, is when we do land use code amendments, we're also going through the Planning Commission at the same time, so we're bouncing back and forth and maintaining two commission schedules, and they actually start their annual amendment process as soon as the last one concludes. So it's nuts. It is on the work plan though. So.
Any more questions, discussion?
So the demolition permit wouldn't be issued until this process has concluded.
Correct.
One way or another, right?
Correct.
So it at least slows it. It's not like they inadvertently get it before we tell them they shouldn't have it.
Yes, it's part of the, and this is coming up. Typically what happens and this is always just kind of internally is a challenge for us, is trying to figure out how to make sure that everybody, all reviewers are reviewing what they need to review, but not, you know, too much. And so in this particular case, most demolition permits are flowing through our office, and then the ones that are subject to this code we catch, and then we, you know, basically say this is a set of requirements for you to submit for our submittals, and then from there, if it meets these other things about like significance or something like that, it'll bounce to the Landmarks Commission, or they'll have to do a cultural resources assessment report, and then that goes out to DHP and to the tribes for comment and so forth. And so, I mean, you think if you've gone through the CEPA process before, sort of like that.
I see a question, possibly being...
Just a clarification about the IPS committee either rejecting or not acting, mm-hmm. That would mean that the demolition permit would be granted.
Yeah, that's correct. It's a pretty big window of time. We'll find out how big it is, but the reason for that is because of committee scheduling, is making sure that there's, you know, it doesn't die out of lack of scheduling. But if the committee just doesn't engage with the recommendation, then it's effectively denied.
I guess if it were a significant enough property and the commission felt very strongly about it, is there any way to emphasize it or compel or prevent them from just not addressing it, or I don't know. I guess it just seems like.
I mean, we can see when that comes up. I mean, the obviously this commission was advisory to city council, and so I would say that, you know, for commissioners that have a strong opinion about things, could also talk to council members as well. I mean, there's nothing preventing that. I think that, and it's always been my feeling that the city would benefit if, you know, commissioners who have strong opinions about things as advisors to city council meet with their city council people, or meet with the committee assignment for this commission is IPS, is the Infrastructure Plan and Sustainability Committee. And so meeting with them on occasion, just, you know, get, and I can facilitate that too, but if you want to visit, like the council members are on that, we can work with their staff and have informational meetings, you know, share ideas, thoughts, things like that. That's always a possibility too, so. Because you were city officers and you were advisory to council.
It's a total hypothetical, but in that same vein, if IPS were to not comment, mm-hmm. I don't know if it would be the same as they've denied a recommendation, but the commission has the ability to put forward nominations on its own, correct?
So that would be awkward, I think.
It would be. I just wonder.
But here's how I would say it, is that there is nothing in, I mean, the code actually, I think, does have a little line item about this. Basically, it says that if there's recommendation going to the council committee from this body and the council committee is sitting on it or whatever, but there's a third party or private citizen initiative to put something on the register, the commission can still consider that.
Because I was just thinking in terms of this, if IPS doesn't say anything, then it dies. But in the reverse, if we put a nomination to IPS and they don't comment, it goes to council, doesn't it?
Yes.
But the question is, how many of those things do we want to run with simultaneously?
That's true. I mean, when you know, and it gets weird. I mean, the whole idea is really is that the commission and the city and the permitting process get to take a look at these things before they go out the door and before we lose buildings. At least there's some due diligence there. I mean, there's always going to be things that are super hot, that are controversial, and that just happens. I mean, when, you know, not to mention the city to the north, but when I was there, there was several times where we had competing nominations going through the process. And it was weird. It was really weird. But so you might have a developer just says, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and submit this nomination and include what I want. I'm going to say what I want to say in it. And then you know, you have the friends of, you know, log peers, you know, say like, well, that's not good enough. We're going to submit our own. And then the Landmarks Board of Seattle's had to choose which one they're running with. So.
Regarding the single-family residential portion, the only time a residential single-family home would be considered is if it was already landmarked or already in a historic district.
Under this code, yes. If it's already on the National Register in a National Register Historic District, it was a bright line that we chose for this. It came out of a couple of years of discussions. It may not be the right spot. We may not have landed there yet, but this is our first shot at this. And so there was quite a bit of, I would say, a strong reaction from the development community on single-family houses. But it is an issue. It is an issue, especially in neighborhoods that are suffering from a lot of distressed properties. And so I would say we see a lot of residential demolition permits come through. And so it may be something we need to address in the future, but it's not in this code.
Any further discussion? Comments, questions, observations, ramblings? Hearing none, I will note that Commissioners Slusser and Sundstrom have entered the building a little previously. Would you both like to introduce yourselves to our new commissioners? You missed our new commissioner introductions.
Could you look to someone else first? Look at me. I'm still catching my breath.
I'm Carol Sundstrom. This is my first year on the committee, and I'm an architect.
What's your second year? You're in your
it's now my second year, I guess.
And I'm Lisa Schlesser. I guess I'm a retired architect at this point. Mm-hmm. And I think that...
I always walked in the wrong room. Is there any right room?
Join us.
There are no wrong rooms?
Landmarks Commission?
No, New Tacoma Neighborhood Council. Is it over there?
Yeah, did we switch? We switched. Yeah, we switched.
Is it true? Okay.
Hey, come on in. You
know. Might be back.
And I guess Jeff and I are being termed out after this year. So I've been doing it for too long.
He gets excited.
It's like, what?
No, after this year, don't get too excited.
No, I think this is our last term. I don't think it's
last year.
It's really more fun than this.
Yeah, we've been kicking around on it for a minute, so.
It's very bad that all the previous commissioners are talking about how they're getting off.
Except for vice chair.
Well, who's been here like for eons?
Where else am I going to go?
So true.
Would the new commissioners briefly just like to reintroduce yourselves to our two late arrivals?
Yeah, my name is Sarah Hilsendegger. I didn't say it before, but I'll say it now. My background is in communication, TV production, project management, currently looking, if anyone knows of any openings. But I love Tacoma history, architecture, so that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to join.
I'm Deborah Cade. I'm the member for the North Slope Historic District, where I've lived for going on 25 years. I've been involved in the neighborhood group there for a long time. Also recently retired from the Attorney General's office after 31 years of representing Washington State Department of Transportation on environmental land use matters, including historic preservation. Kevin was, of course, one of my favorite clients.
I'm glad you say favorite. People are not frequent.
And I'm Leah Jaggers in the Wedge District ex officio. I live in the Titlow House on Sheridan. So, but my background is actually in software training, so very unrelated to this. But I'm a classical studies major, so I just have a passion for history, and I'm just really excited to learn about it.
Great. We're going to also have to figure out, because I noticed we're, when we have one, because we're missing one new commissioner who's excused this evening, but we will have very little room for applicants in the room once, if we have a full commission.
So, no applicants.
Just a note, just a note. We'll be very scary as they have to sit in here, be surrounded by folks. Okay, so moving on to more planning and board business. We have the amendments to the guidelines, bylaws, and inventory.
Yes, sir. Sorry, we're having a side
That's
check.
Okay.
So this is held over from last year. We're slightly on behind our cycle just because we chose not to meet in December. Everybody had a good December. And so the once a year, the commission reviews its bylaws, inventories, and design guidelines if amendments are desired. We have no amendments to the bylaws proposed for this year by the commission. No changes to the building inventories, but we did have a number of changes to the design guidelines for the North Slope and Wedge neighborhood that were suggested during a series of discussions with the commission. And so I tried best to capture some of, or capture all of them as best I could. In the packets, there are the design guidelines themselves with, I believe, I gave you, just because we don't want to make a choice what to include, what not to include, we included the whole thing, but you'll see there's underlined red for edits, and then I included them in this table here. So I'll just dive on right on in. Mm-hmm. I'll say, so first, on page 17, there's a request to include solar panels. We've had a couple of solar panel installations that have come before the commission. We didn't have any language for it, really, so they were always considered just under rooftop additions. And so some language explicitly referring to roof-mounted solar equipment that provides some guidance. So this sentence is proposed to be added. It's not very specific. It's just really there to provide notice that the commission's concerned with visibility, visual impact, and location on the roof. Part of this is because I didn't perceive a clear consensus on solar panels from this commission, just based on the couple of reviews we've done. And so I don't think the commission wants to be too restrictive on them. At the same time, I think that they're just showing people who read the guidelines that the commission's concerned with how they impact the appearance of the house. That was what we're aiming for. So you could write more on this, but I thought at least this is what I have from the commission so far. I'll just go through these all, and maybe we can revisit ones mm-hmm. we want to talk yeah. about. There's also a number of changes related back to detached accessory dwelling units and accessory buildings. And so I moved between a couple of different sections here. And if you know, the design guidelines for the North Slope and Wedge are divided into rehab guidelines and then new construction guidelines. For a history lesson, the new construction guidelines really are the old guidelines that used to exist prior to 2012. And so all of the rehab guidelines, the bulk of it's in the front of the guidelines, are all since 2012. So the original district was just created with those new construction guidelines. And so that's why there are some kind of strange divisions between things, and parking has its own section. So first we proposed to change the garages and parking section, which primarily used to be concerned with where you parked your car and what the garage looked like, to include accessory structures. And then adding under item two, under minimized views, add the new accessory structure to be clearly subservient to the primary structure on the lot. Item 5, new accessory structures and garages who utilize a similar material pallet configuration to historic accessory structures. The idea is that garages should look like garages, look like old garages. The new accessory structures should meet the guidelines for new construction of exterior materials, windows, roof form, and shape. And they should orient vehicle doors to the alley and maintain the civil roof plan with a single ridge line. And all these are guidelines. So trying to emphasize again, I think there was some concern with how people are going to construct these, what they would look like, and then how they're, if there's existing structures that are converted. Accessory structures built during the district period of significance that are converted to residential use should retain the exterior visual characteristics of the accessory structure, including door and window configuration, cladding materials, and form. Added features such as porches, exterior staircases, and new windows or door openings, and this is where we assume they're going to happen sometime, should be oriented to be minimally visible from public rights of way. So that means that you're not creating, you know, porches on alleys and things like that. And again, the idea is to preserve that character, the appearance of, and you know, we may not have hit it quite right, but that's, this was our proposal to try to address some of the concerns we're hearing from Commissioner McClintock and others that about how to incorporate these into the district. You know, honestly, I mean, from our staff perspective, we think I noted that, actually, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, that under the actual zoning code, there are some fairly you know, good regulations for DADUs already. They can't be taller than the primary structure, 18 feet tall for standalone maximum, and 15 in VSDs. 15 is the current residential limit, but it's an average. And then can't be more than 15% of the lot area, 85% of the living area of the primary structure, and no more than 1,000 square feet. And so that's what zoning tells us without any historic district.
So I feel like the single ridge line is too restrictive.
Okay.
I could see a hip roof on a, you know, addition over the top of a garage for living space. So I kind of feel like that's really restrictive when you're talking because, you know, you might want to dormer it or whatever. So that I do think that it should be taken out.
Okay.
Also, it says in item 6, conversion of accessory structures built during the district period of significance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's a brand new accessory dwelling or accessory building, then that's not the period of significance. So this number 6 wouldn't apply.
Yeah, it's just there's two separate things. There's addressing new ones that are being built, purpose-built, and then ones that are converting old garages into or accessory buildings. I mean, it's kind of a strange area to try to negotiate through the design guidelines because accessory buildings aren't treated exactly the same under our code and under design review with this commission. Yet we anticipate that they're going to become a lot more important for folks. And so, and the other thing that makes it tricky for us too is this is the first set of design guidelines that has anything to do with land use. And that's all like a lane change for the commission, which really is concerned with exterior design and appearance only. And so we're really trying to touch on the land use side of things as lightly as possible on this and really focus only on appearance.
The other thing I had with 5 that I had a little issue with was the we're saying that it should utilize a similar material palette and configuration to historic accessory structures. I do feel like there should be a link to the existing property that's the existing structure that's there.
The style,
yeah. So you could have a very, very different style. You know, what I want to prohibit or have from happening is that someone comes in and says, there's a garage down there, and I want to make my garage look just like that. And so I've got a Victorian house, and I'm saying, I want the garage that looks like the 1920s Craftsman garage. So I feel like the new accessory structure or garage should mimic the existing home, not just other garages or ADUs in the neighborhood.
So have language like primary structure.
Right,
primary structure
exactly.
Language like in the previous one.
Because I think that's going to dictate period better than,
The other possibility, though, is that the historic structure could be quite an ugly duckling that's in some state of transitional modification that doesn't meet any particular architectural vocabulary,
sure.
And we're not requiring them to restore it to original, so then what are they to do? So that's where that language comes in handy for that.
Right.
You know, I wonder if leaving it like it is and leaving it for committee interpretation as to what that means, if it's terribly incongruent, you know, they really are pulling from blocks and blocks away, they're pulling a fanciful carriage house for, you know, if that's within, right. That's within our purview.
Yeah, I mean, we could do both. We could also say that something that, like the new accessory structure, the palette should reference the historic palette of the primary structure, you know, if present or something like that. And we can, you know, or the exterior materials for the district. I mean, provide some flexibility in there. I think that, I mean, really for us, at least as I see it, the design guidelines are designed not to dictate the design of a project as much as provide adequate guidance for someone coming in to reasonably anticipate what the commission is going to do with it. So,
I mean, another way to phrase it might be to say it's compatible with the primary structure. Uh-huh. As opposed to saying it has to be the same
yeah,
style.
Yeah,
like that. No, that's
compatible.
But so that gives the commission flexibility too.
Well, if the house is Victorian, but then the people got a car, then the garage is going to look like it's from the teens.
So is that, so hearing that, then the addition of configuration to historic accessory structures and compatible, I mean, are we talking about the both?
It sounds like it.
Is mm-hmm. that, just wanted to clarify that.
So now, that you don't, you know, I would say I wouldn't want the design guidelines to paint the commission into a corner also, though, so
right,
they need
right.
some flexibility.
Yeah.
Well, my first read-through of it, mm-hmm. as, you know, thinking as if I was submitting a project was, okay, it doesn't have to be as fancy as the house. That's what I first read. And then when I got to the, but new structures have to be just as if they were new construction, mm-hmm. then I got confused because I was like, which is it? Is it an accessory structure to a lower standard, or is it our intent to bring these accessory structures that are dwelling units to the same standard as primary dwelling units?
Well, that's kind of the rub that we perceive too, because the read we were getting, at least, especially I think with Commissioner McClintock, was that he really wanted to push a higher design standard for DADUs. And again, like for, and then for us, the challenge then is, well, that's, you know, that's, it's kind of hitched to land use and actual use. And we want to state a design intent, but, and not have it dependent on what people are doing inside of a building.
Yeah. It's tough.
I know, right?
It's tough. But I think reading it, I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be designing. If I could do a simple drop siding on the back, even though you got, you know, beveled siding with mitered corners on the house, because that's something you commonly saw back in the day, or if that would be considered incongruent with what's going, you know.
Sure.
One of the things I'm hearing, you know, the questions I get about DADUs is like, somebody's just going to put up like a really modern, you know, corrugated metal building and make it an apartment, you know, and that's, I think, the biggest thing I keep hearing. So I think as long as it's compatible with the house and, you know, it has to meet the guidelines, I think we should leave ourselves as much leeway as we can on deciding how appropriate it is. But to me, I think somebody could make a really good argument that it should be subservient and of lesser quality than an existing house.
Well, it's the of lesser quality, right?
Yeah.
And then we get into who determines what's lesser quality.
Exactly.
It's truly back when they were being built, they were very cheaply built,
yeah.
Certainly not to be lived in unless it was a carriage house,
mm-hmm.
perhaps. But I'm not quite sure how to clear it up. But when I read it, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be lesser than in quality or equal to based on that language, depending upon what was.
I think that the, you know, the subservient portion falls under the minimizing views. I mean, to me, I take that to mean subservient
in terms of
size,
mass.
Scale, massing, exactly,
mm-hmm.
those things that are subservient to that primary structure versus anything to do with materials, given where that falls in the guideline.
And I would say that the commission has always used the exterior palette, materials palette, for like when someone's going to build a new garage, has always been subject to that. It's just how the commission has, you know, decided to to interpret that. And then, you know, because it basically says, you know, horizontal wood was common, you know, brick was less common. And,
yeah.
And so it's not super strict.
What if we strike the word from item five, the accessory before accessory structures in that first sentence?
Just say historic structures.
Historic structures. Is it was the accessory structures.
That, right.
Because, like, I'm supposed to just look at historic accessory structures when establishing my materials palette versus, sure. Then that gives us a little bit more.
T111. There's a lot of T111 around. Okay, that's yeah, that's fine.
And I heard Commissioner Williams, so the striking of the with a single ridge line, but
yep,
keeping a simple roof plan.
Even state that.
Yeah. Where is that one?
This is the last sentence on item five.
Last sentence on five.
I think you're going to have to say when possible, because not all of the hidden doors can necessarily face the alley. There's some parallel approach existing.
Mm-hmm.
Garages.
Well, it's a should and not a must.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you don't have enough clearance to have the doors come straight off onto the
simple
alley.
So what do you call a simple roof plan? What is a simple roof plan?
That's what I was saying.
To me,
just
like,
take that away.
Like a dormer on each side is a simple roof plan.
No
butterfly roofs.
Yeah, butterfly roofs, like, you know, multiple cross gables, false gables, things like that.
But what if it's a fanciful house?
Right. So, those, you know, onion tops they put on, like, you know.
I don't think we should specify. Dishes. I think we should just say, you know, appropriate. The roof line should be appropriate to the other guidelines that we're stating here, which is it visual characteristics and.
Well,
to me, that covers it.
We just strike that sentence altogether.
Yeah, I don't think we need to dictate roof plans.
Well, in five, it references back to the new construction guidelines, right? So they would,
yeah.
I mean, we have roof shapes and materials in those guidelines.
Exactly.
As well.
Isn't the orientation of vehicle doors covered in land use code?
Yeah, maybe, but this
they
is.
They have setbacks and turning radiuses and whatnot.
This is anticipating conversion uses mostly, and so the idea is again just to try to encourage garages to look like garages, or things that are in the spot where garages historically went should look like garages.
I see kind of a gap between five and six. What about a garage that was built in the 80s or 90s and it's outside the period of significance, but it wasn't built to the standards that would apply for new construction? So you have a standard that would apply for new construction. You have a standard that would apply for conversion of an older garage, but we don't have one that would apply to a newer garage that was built prior to these guidelines being applicable to accessory structures.
But we talked about there being like a change of use trigger, that if a change of use is proposed, then the modifications must be consistent.
Then it becomes one or
new.
The other of these.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't see that in here.
Again, it's the change of use thing that is sort of is outside of the wheelhouse of this commission. But and I think the other thing is that during the period of significance, part of that is because the garage built in the 1980s, unless you're going to knock it down or add to the footprint of it, is not within this commission's jurisdiction.
Not a construction.
Okay. Gotcha. That makes sense.
So that's where that's coming from. We can knock the period of significance out, and we just say, you know, accessory structures that are converted to residential, you should retain these things. And then you assume that the things you that are before this commission are the ones that are within your jurisdiction. And if you don't see it, then it's not. And so the distinction maybe is moot.
I had a question about six, just for my clarification. If it was an old, like, carriage house or stable house, just using the house that I live in as an example, that's currently used for garages as well as storage. So if that was then converted to residential use for whatever reason, then would it have to maintain like the carriage door and all of that? I just make sure I understand that.
That'd be the desire, yeah.
Okay.
And again, for this commission, the only things that you're going to see are things that affect contributing structures and that involve exterior alterations. And so if someone manages to do this in a way that doesn't affect the exterior of the building at all, which, I mean, I think can be done, then it wouldn't even come to the commission. But people are going to park their cars someplace. They're going to do, you know, some sort of configuration changes to accommodate new residents. And so there's probably something that will hook But this is why this is a strange thing.
I guess if you had something that didn't, that wasn't significant, like the an example like from the 80s, I was just trying to think of kind of a hypothetical that someone built something that in some way could kind of affect the primary structure. I mean, just by its visual presence, I guess, that would happen.
Like adding a story to a single garage or something.
Yeah, I mean, there's those height limits that go along. So I'm just thinking, if you're to take something from the 80s and make it some kind of atrocious thing, that oh wow, I can't go by this house without looking at that. Would that be not allowable already? I mean, because you're saying that wouldn't be reviewed by the commission, right? If it's a structure from the 80s, it's not.
Not adding to the footprint, but changing the exterior of a non-contributing building. What you mean?
Yeah, I mean, would there be an instance, I don't know if there would there be an instance where you could have a situation where you would change that non-contributing building in such a way that it could have an effect to the primary structure? Yeah.
But I mean, that's the same thing with the house, though, too. I mean, we have, you know, if you have a non-contributing house and someone modifies that house, it's going to have an effect on the neighborhood, but it's not within this.
We don't have the purview. Okay.
It's just the, you know, and it's, some people would say it's a loophole, you know, it's the bright line threshold that has been established, just like the building permit threshold as well, that if it doesn't require a building permit, the commission doesn't look at it by code. And so there's a lot of really horrible things you can do to a house that are below that permit threshold. And fortunately, we haven't had too many spiteful people that, you know, want to do that to make a point, you know. That's like, you know, no pink polka dot houses. But yes, I mean, it's possible.
Okay. But it doesn't really, it's not pertinent because it's not pertinent.
I mean, that's what I mean, and it could be that, you know, going down the road, that there's going to be things that we clearly are going to have to address. I mean, just when we find out that, you know, hey, somebody did X, Y, Z, and you know, someone tore an entire house down over the weekend, we have to address that in the code. There's just things that happen. But so what
we'll have our sacrificial lambs.
So let's see here. What I have is deleting the word accessory structures from item 5, the first sentence, and that, you know, and also referencing being compatible or being compatible primary structure, that there should be more flexibility with the orientation of the vehicle doors towards the alley. We can say like, you know, where possible, we could say, you know, where allowable the lot configuration or whatever.
There's plenty of those houses that were built with, you know, a driveway straight from the front, and there was a garage in the back that burned down, and, you know, that's still going to be the orientation because there's no alley. So I think, you know, stating something that explicitly is probably not going to work for us.
Deleting the simple roof plan and single ridge line entirely. And then deleting the built during the period of significance. So then moving, and by the way, this is what this is proposed for is not the final guidelines, but really what we put out as a public draft comment. We had a specific request to include more guidance in the window configurations in detail. So this is windows. I didn't put a page number on that, I'm sorry. 25. Oh, there it is, 25. And it's under here, we have all these things about how in the existing guidelines they should be vertically oriented. This is all language from the 1990s when the district was first established. And then it was actually Commissioner McClintock again who asked for additional detail and guidance about what should be included in a window, because I think that he's seen some examples where people are just doing flat stock and no detail at all. And so best attempt to summarize what I got from his comments, the detail patterns for buildings and the new window trim should, again, use historic detail patterns. And then some guidance with flexibility, but include crown molding. This is actually his language, except where headers are engaged with a belly band or cornice, substantial projecting sills with aprons, and windows that are recessed or punched in so the window sash and frame does not project beyond the wall plane. And that design submittals for new structures shall include window detail, which they should anyways, but put his guidelines. We can put guidelines in. So,
so in the same fashion that you have commonly windows were surrounded, maybe the ridgeline could be mentioned like that. Commonly, ridgelines were simple for accessory. If you wanted to have some sort of reference to that, just to sort of encourage them in that direction, but without dictating.
Although it's called, it is called out on page 23 in the roof shade that you, you refer to in that same, in that same number four, when you're meeting the guidelines of the new roof form and shape, those are, you know, shape and pitch is in there and talks about gable, primarily being gable.
Yeah, I think the big thing is avoiding like mini McMansions, you know, with lots of false things. I mean, you know, with a stone turret. A deity with a stone turret on the side now. You know, before
a big turret on the real house.
before last year, I would have thought that was impossible. No one would propose that, but I was wrong. So,
just been no stone turrets.
We probably should.
Can we just say less is more? Let that be your guiding light.
Less isn't more for some people who just want more.
More is more for some people.
So is that are there any comments on the windows portion?
No. Did we get Marshall's approval on that?
He wrote this.
On this?
Marshall wrote it. Okay, cool. Don't worry.
I mean, I may have changed a couple of words in there, but that was essentially what he was thinking. Okay. I think it was big on the aprons below the sills, so that like, you know, have a window with, you know, no pants on. So that's it. And so the really what we're I think we're asking for, we still good February 12th. Okay. So I got the recommendations if everybody's concurs with those for the draft language, and so if so, then we would ask the hearing date set for February 12th.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's I just wanted to comment since we're on the solar panel that I think that just because I think that was one of the more controversial things we've had in the last few years when we had that solar panel install. But I think it captures enough of that flexibility where, the thing that was before the commission was trying to maximize the solar capacity, whatever you want to call it, the solar exposure, and balance that with the exposure, the visibility of the panels and those things. So we don't
discourage. Can we just say they can't be on the front facade, period? I mean, is that too limiting?
I think that's too limiting. I mean, I think we saw that in what came before us. I mean, it was a visible side.
That was an alley facade that was visible from the sidewalk, which is why.
Right.
Well, the house didn't have an alley. Well, it did have an alley, but it was on the other side of the lot. So this is on.
I think it was a corner house, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a corner house. And it was on the back side of the roof on the minor street, the major street.
It's visible. It's visible from
the sidewalk.
Yeah,
it's like right on that side of the house, but it wasn't the front of the house.
Yeah,
one other the two primary facades. Could we say solar panels visible from the front facade are generally not acceptable?
I would say not acceptable.
Or
I can never see me being cool with solar panels on
the
front of
Tesla
a house.
Until we get the Tesla shingles.
Well, those aren't solar panels though. Those are just shingles. That evidently sometimes catch on fire.
We don't even know if they look good. We don't even know if we like them yet.
We don't.
They're going to be shiny.
So, and this is a good example. I don't like of the balance we're trying to strike.
Right.
And so I think that I think this is an evolving discussion too. But so I mean, I'm fine with saying that, and because I think that most people would probably agree that. The solar panels on the front elevation of on the front side of the roof on a historic house is not as optimal as elsewhere if you can accommodate it. And so, but I think we're trying to get there with that language. But so if you have an alternative, you use that alternative.
Well, I mean, that's why I just like saying it can't be on the front side, period. So it's not coming in front of us to say, are you okay with this? And we say no.
But you are ruling out then, solar panels for, say, a south-facing a gabled house.
Yeah.
Has a south facing rear.
You absolutely
them
are.
You can't have
then they're going to come with as tall of a pole as they can get and their array on a pole that's and they're going to say, but we'll say it's still visible from the front.
Exactly.
I don't know. In my mind, I wonder if it sort of runs in the same vein as the right to communication equipment that we were already running up against, with, you know, that neighborhood associations try to tell you where you can put your satellite dish, but you can actually put it where you have to put it to get the signal, whether the neighborhood association likes it or not. And we wouldn't want those on the front of houses either, but we don't review that. That doesn't come to us. But this kind of falls in that same, like, because now we're starting to legislate that everybody make their homes solar ready. So what if your home, I mean, these are existing homes, these are historic homes. Mm-hmm. But
I think the more restrictive we can be up front, so those types of things don't come in front of us, I think the better off we are. Because I don't, with a current solar panel, I mean, there's a house two doors down from us in Proctor that the entire front of the house was solar paneled. And it ruined the house. That faces south. But, you know, I think if you're going to own a historic house in a historic district and your house faces south, then that's not going to be cool. So you need to put it on your garage roof or you need to do something else. But I think it's, and as solar panels become more advanced, they don't necessarily need to be south facing anymore either. I mean, you know, they've got other applications that are happening. So
the solar panels are temporary. They don't, you can put them on and take them off and the house hasn't been affected.
Now, those blue vinyl awnings for your car from Costco are also temporary.
But we don't regulate those.
No. Don't need a permit.
I just would like it to say, I mean, and maybe I'm alone here, so I don't want to dictate.
Well, if you had a front-facing gable, if they put them on one side or the other, they're still visible from the front, though.
I think that's
right?
The story on him. Fifth and M.
So they're not going to be completely never visible from the front, because then you're saying only homes that have a certain orientation and a certain roof shape can have solar panels. So then are we going to get sued?
I don't think he was saying visible from the front. But
they can't be mounted. They can't be mounted on the front
facade.
Yeah, but then you're going to have them sticking up off the gable on a pole. But they're going to mount them to the back and stick.
Oh, I guess that. Yes, then.
And we don't want that either.
Right. So it's hard to legislate taste.
Right? we have in the guidelines when we have things that are more restrictive. You know, there's language like are discouraged in there rather than something that's uber restrictive, like saying
this is something like it shouldn't be a dominant feature. Solar panels, which are a dominant feature, are discouraged or not allowed. Because then, if you're covering the whole entire front of a whatever or the whole side of something, then that's where it might not be appropriate.
I would propose for now one of two things: either we just run with what we got, or else for now. Or else that we add just a bit on there that says solar panels located on the primary elevation of the house are discouraged, generally discouraged. We can say that.
Yeah.
And then that says that the commission has concerns with the visual impact of the front of the house with these solar panels, but doesn't rule it out entirely.
Right.
And kind of gets you into a. At the same time, I think that there's folks that are increasingly becoming extremely concerned with sustainability and trying to merge these two things together, historic buildings and environmental sustainability,
right.
And alternative energy sources come into that as well. So we're going to see more of these applications.
Right.
That's my concern.
The problem with however it was phrased as much as possible or however what that phraseology was is that we're relying upon the applicant to come in and say, oh, well, my guy said that it's not possible to put it anywhere else. And we're disempowered to argue with that because we're not going to go hire our own kind of people to go out and show them a better, different way to do it. We can ask them to get another proposal and come back, but we don't know, you know,
applicants can steer that heavily because they are going to hire these people to do a job, and people will write whatever an applicant
has. Well, yeah, it's just like the window guys that say this house has to have vinyl windows because, you know, we've seen that. Because
the house will fall down without them. So the,
the energy efficiency is going to be horrible if you leave these old windows.
Because our children's room is too cold.
Yeah, exactly.
There's good data on some of that, but the what I guess here's another thing we can say. We can just try to tie it back to the Secretary of the Interior standards and just say that the solar equipment should not dominate or obscure character-defining architectural features. And that would include, you know, we can include the front of the primary facade thing, but that would include the thing like the roof, you know, appearance and its shape and so forth. And that gives the commission enough to work with when they're talking to an applicant says, you know, this is really altering the spatial characteristics of the house and the visual quality of it. I mean, and that also gets you to the point where someone want to put up one panel or two panels or cover the whole house with them. I mean, there's a distinction there. Mm-hmm. And that part of that, you know, part of that discretion is the commission's job, right? Is to try to find that balance. So,
yeah. I'm fine with that. Is everyone else fine with that?
Do we want to put any language in there about balancing the efficiency of the panel with the lowest visibility, or is that just kind of assumed that people are going to want to get the highest efficiency and we have to strike that balance?
They might have to settle for less efficiency due to their restricted maintenance requirements. Yeah.
Right, I guess so. I'm just thinking of the one that we approved, which there was fairly significant drop in efficiency to push it further back toward the alley of the tree, and we allowed them to move it closer to the sidewalk where it was more visible.
Well, we can, so, again, for guidance, I mean, if you want to say it shouldn't obscure, you know, alter should be, you know, discouraged beyond the primary facade, and the guidelines could say something like, which may result in like a reduced performance or suboptimal or something like that, just as people are aware of that there is a balance there.
But we're not going to just give them whatever performs best, I mean, but that's not the strong arm.
What I'd be concerned about is like if you said that the commission is trying to balance that you, if you're in an appeal situation, the hearing examiner is going to go, well, okay, how do they, what's the calculation? What's the balance? Like, how do they determine that? Is there any guidance for that?
Yeah.
From my perspective anyways, just enough guidance to say that you may not get the best performance out of your solar panels because we're looking at other things too. I can see that we're all of one mind.
Yeah. My concern was actually, not that I'm also concerned about the historic character of the homes, obviously, but the way it was worded, and sorry, my laptop died, I don't remember the exact phrasing, but I wouldn't want actually a commissioner to be able to use this to say, should be located in a manner that reduces its visual impact to the extent possible, to say that what we approved previously, I feel like with this language, someone could say that didn't follow these guidelines, because we didn't make them have the least visual impact. That's what I'm concerned about. So, because we did allow a slightly, and I would say within the standards, because it was visible from the sidewalk with like scenario one or the further back scenario, I forget which number it was, and it wasn't primary facade. So I think it was appropriate, but I think you could make the argument that we didn't make them have the absolute least visual impact for that project. So that's my concern.
You could say reduces its visual impact to the extent practicable rather than possible. I mean, possible, anything's possible.
Right.
You know, and depending on what you want to compromise or what you want to spend, but practicable takes into account the usefulness of the panels.
I do like that.
Yeah,
like
okay.
That's good without raising the issue of an actual percentage or something.
Yeah, because I didn't want to get into, like,
13
if it's going to go up a certain number of percentage of efficiency and blah, 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 like, that's, and also not our expertise, so I didn't want to get into that, but I also didn't want.
Where you land on the efficiency versus ugly spectrum.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Okay.
I think I have enough.
Do you have enough?
I'm going to combine this into an elegant.
inelegant or an elegant?
No, ambiguity is
you want just enough ambiguity, but a lot of distinction.
Is it flexible certainty or certain flexibility?
Yeah. Both, please.
Do we need a motion to move that forward?
Yeah. Motion to second.
So the do I hear a motion to set a date for the public hearing of the changes to the proposed language changes to the guidelines?
Will we review the revised language again in committee?
There will be another vote to actually do the formal adoption following public hearing. So unless you want us to bring back revised language before you release it and set a public hearing.
I would prefer that we polish this up before we...
Okay, we'll be back. We'll be back with revised language on the 22nd then. So the we no motion then.
Okay.
I'm not telling you guys what to do.
Is that general, I guess, as other commissioners would like to hear? I guess we could entertain a motion or we could wait. I mean, it's really up to the commission if there would be a motion or not being moved forward.
We would, there's no hurry on this. I just would say that we can bring back the revisions from the discussion here on the 22nd. Then we would propose we push back the hearing date by a meeting or two, just so we have adequate time to do notice. But it's not a big deal.
Would it be possible to... I guess because we can't, as a commission, would we be able to make edits at the public hearing, or would that only be for public comment?
I would say, just to keep it clean, it's really nice just to have a public comment.
And have the public comment on that document.
Yeah, I mean, we can discuss after testimony is concluded, if there's additional changes after that, you know, you perceive. But usually what we do is we'd have a hearing, then we'd take a meeting to digest and analyze and respond to the comments, assuming we get some. And then the following meeting is when we'd hash it out.
Oh, okay. So there would be time after the public meeting to make further changes.
Yes.
Yeah, but then the issue is if we change anything that really changes interpretation, then it's like we weren't really forthright in our public.
Yeah, I would say that you want to be as close as possible on your release. This is what the commission is proposing to adopt, and then if there's a public hearing, you get like some of the feedback. You just like, oh, this is a great idea, great improvements, or there's some significant opposition to certain things or whatever. You make those changes, but you won't want to change the scope dramatically or the intent or whatever without offering opportunity for further public comment. But I think we're talking about kind of details right now. So again, I think that there's a desire to come back with language next meeting. Totally cool with me.
I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And I think we shall do that. And you have everything you need, Ruben, to make it inelegant or an elegant proposal.
That's right.
Fantastic.
The tougher you want to be on those solar panels, the better. Just to reiterate. I'll just send you the picture of my neighbor.
Well, if McClintock can write part of it, you should be able to write some of it.
Draft language will be coming from Commissioner Williams. Okay. We will, seeing still no Michael Sullivan, we'll keep going with our Preservation Planning Board business. Next is officer elections, a fun part of every year we have no rules governing such elections.
You guys just got elected.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, and you're doing such a great job.
Why are we even going over
Well, then
this?
We can, as Ruben points out, since there's nothing in the bylaws, we can draw straws, we can throw rocks, we can unanimously anoint.
We just picked you guys like 2 months ago.
Re-elected as chair.
A year ago?
Yeah.
2 months ago?
Yeah.
And that's how I happened to get in.
Yeah. Oh, it was to Phil Ken's.
All right. Why would we contradict ourselves?
I am willing to serve again for a chair, so we don't have to do that.
Thank you.
So that's applause.
Rocky.
Yeah, I'll be all right.
Okay.
All right.
Mark that one off our list.
See if we'll be missing any meetings.
So the rest of the commission can breathe easy now.
Well, I'm just ready to duck under the table.
Excellent. So I'm hearing a unanimous declaration of approval and support and outcry of
outpouring,
love.
Yeah.
Outpouring.
Admiration of your skillful diplomacy.
Excellent.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
okay. Fantastic.
Do we go over this Michael's item if he's not here?
We can.
Okay, let's.
We're not going to. Should we jump to that before we do the events?
We can do events.
Oh, it's always everyone's favorite part, and kind of.
I can see a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Events.
Thank you. All right. So tomorrow we have the Heritage Project Grant Workshop. So if anybody is planning to submit a grant, or you know of anyone who wants to submit a grant, they should attend the workshop to learn how to do so. Historic Preservation Month, we'll be celebrating cultural landscapes, so I'm planning the calendar now. So if you have organizations that want to put things on the calendar, let me know. And then Forum 2020, that's coming up quick. We're going to need volunteers. We're still looking for sponsors. Anything else for you for Forum? We're just looking for sponsors and volunteers at this point.
It's July, right? The Forum?
Where is anything back on the proposal submissions? Do you know when those?
Very shortly, actually. They just sent out
the internal spreadsheet. We're confirming it
right now. Yeah.
Commissioner Kate?
Oh, what were the dates of the Forum?
July 22nd to 26th.
Is that a
Wednesday to Saturday?
Tuesday to
Sunday.
Wednesday.
I think there's a final tour on the Sunday, what we're thinking.
Okay. And, you know, the NIPC is fun. They're fun. It's a fun conference, especially if you're into, you know, design review for windows and things like that.
We're planning a lot of fun tours, and we're hoping all commissioners write to cover their registration fees.
Yes.
So,
okay,
we're all covered.
Well, you'll be there.
Send your representatives.
Great.
But not alone. I'm representing the Washington Trust, actually, truly. Mm-hmm. So, we do still need a commissioner to come.
We will figure that out. There will be commission presence. Okay, so that is all. And then I hear that we would move on with design review without the applicant present?
Yes. If it's okay with the commission.
I believe the commission would probably be okay with that. We'll move forward with the design review of 2105 South C Street.
And you're allowed 15 minutes.
Now it's 10.
15 minutes. Well, I'll be quick. That's first step.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, well,
you're out of order, but go ahead.
Before Lauren starts, I just wanted to say that this design review we had here, this was something that Horizon brought to us the end of last year. It was really, really close to an administrative review, partly because this commission has seen this project several times. And so it's just some changes to the configuration. Lauren will talk about it, but changes to the configuration of the storefront retail level and canopy and signage. And so, but it was just beyond that scope of what we considered something we proposed for administrative review. There's just a number of changes. So.
Okay. With that, the staff report.
All right, thank you. Built in 1910, this building is an individual landmark on the Tacoma Register of Historic Places. The project includes exterior and interior improvements to the Commerce Street, which is the rear elevation. The commission was introduced to this project in 2018 during the design review for the adjacent Brewery Blocks building. The existing overhead door opening and adjacent bay to the south, which includes a door and side window, will be replaced with a matching storefront door and upper transom lights. Damage to the brickwork will be repaired, and the vertical pilasters will be restored after widening to accommodate the overhead door opening. The existing windows on the far south and north bays will be repaired and repainted to match the new dark bronze storefront frame. The two new storefront door and transom assemblies will be metal-clad wood in dark bronze color with outswinging double doors and divided light transoms, matching the mullion patterns on the original windows. Flat roof canopies will shade the bays supported by wall-anchored chains or cables to match the configuration on the adjacent 2120 building. The center entry canopy will be higher to accommodate signage on the shop entries. Industrial porcelain shade light fixtures will be mounted to the pilasters. A new entry door and side light will be added on the north elevation to access the courtyard and provide an additional exit. The door and frame will be metal-clad wood in a matching dark bronze color. A concrete wall and 4-foot metal handrail will meet the exit on the exterior as required by code. Ductwork for the kitchen, exhaust, and air will rise along the upper north wall to avoid window openings above. The packet includes options for painted and unpainted ductwork, so they left that up to the commission's discretion. These standards are the Secretary of the Interior Standards for Rehabilitation of Historic Buildings, number 9 and number 10. The analysis is that this property is an individual dual landmark on the Tacoma Register of Historic Places, and as such, is subject to review by this commission for any changes. 2, the existing brickwork and pilasters will be restored. Existing windows will also be repaired. 3, the proposed alterations are on the rear facade and do not destroy character-defining features. The proposed changes are compatible with the overall materials and design of the existing structure. 4, the proposed changes could be reversed, but harming the essential form integrity of the structure. Staff recommends approval of the application. Thank you.
Thank you. And I discussed this with Ruben before. We're going to start doing this, maybe have been done previously, but we're going to start doing this now after staff reports, prior to opening it up to applicants, even though we don't have an applicant here this evening. We're going to have opportunity for the commission to have discussion on the staff report, just because this will be the first time that we'll actually be in person seeing that with staff, so that if you have any questions or comments or concerns with the staff report, it's a time for us to air those as a commission with the staff to have a discussion with those that don't include the applicant, so that we can be clear on that report prior to opening it up to the applicant. So
the applicant would be present for that discussion.
Yes, they would be here, but they can't until I give them the floor, take that floor. So we would be having that discussion amongst ourselves if there was anything, like there was a concern with, I don't quite agree with this, or can you give me more information about why the staff determined that we can have that discussion, so we're all on the same page prior to moving over to the applicant. So with that, is there any discussion, question, or comment on the staff reports? Hearing none, I would normally now open it up to the applicant, but since they're not there, I'll just open up the application that's before the commission for any comment.
I'm fine with everything. I don't see a need to paint the ductwork.
Same.
Yeah.
So that means, I was looking at that, so that means keeping it the stainless, unpainted.
Yeah,
I think that's better.
Yeah.
It just looks dirty.
It looks weird.
Definitely looks weird when it's painted to look like brick, like camouflage.
I mean, you could make an argument they could paint the same metal color as the metal awnings if they prefer, but I would say either unpainted or the color of the dark gray of the awning.
I think making it look like what it is.
Yeah,
I think we approve that for the building. The Walker supposed to be a steakhouse.
Yeah, the Walker has that. And there's also similar conduits up the back of the Olympus Hotel.
Mm-hmm. All righty then.
Does the rest of the commission agree with that? Is there any objections? No. Does anyone have any concern with the application?
The front facade?
Yeah, the facade, no issue. No, hearing.
Careful what you wish for.
Hearing none. Chair is willing to entertain a motion.
I move the Landmarks Preservation Commission approve the application for 2105 South C Street as submitted.
Is a motion by Commission?
With the recommendation the ductwork remain unpainted.
Okay, it's a motion.
Or matching metal lines.
Is that friendly?
Yeah, to the owner's discretion.
It's a motion by Commissioner Williams. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Slessor. Is there any discussion about the motion before us? Hearing none, we'll move to a voice vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes unanimously, and you got that. It's up to the owner's discretion between unpainted and bronze. Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, we have some chair comments.
And now we move on to the chair comments.
Hold them up. Hold them up.
Just because of the unanimous approval of this administration, I think that we will have a wrap.
Sure.
Oh, great. Thanks, everyone. And I'll say that we're going to have a advisory committee meeting for those on the advisory committee, for those new commissioners. Just say that we have we formed, I believe that's what it's called in our bylaws. It's the advisory committee to the commission, which it's our purview to create at any time, that's on equity and diversity and representation on landmarks that we're doing. So if any of the new commissioners would like to stay for that or join that committee as well, we have representation from Historic Tacoma and the commission on that.
It's the
after
party.
It's a little, yeah. It is.
And we're such a
diverse. It's with staff.
I know,
as well.
You're almost outnumbered, Jeff.
I will, as commissioners leave, adjourn this meeting.